Welcome to another edition of the Romance Program. I'm volunteer Jeannie Ose for Sun Sounds. I've got two stories coming up this hour I hope you'll enjoy. The first one is from True Love magazine called Mr. Please Help Me. Here's the story. I yawned and rolled down the driver's side window of my rig as it barreled down the interstate just east of Kansas City. The chill blackness of the night, broken only by the hypnotizing white center stripes on the road and the glow in the dark eyes of the occasional roadside varmint, had me fighting to stay awake. I turned to look at the girl curled up on the seat beside me. Her silky brown hair was splayed across her arm, and the dashboard light cast an eerie greenish tinge over her pale face. I moved uneasily. I was tired and hungry, and I had a schedule to keep. Saddling myself with a stranded teenager was the last thing I needed. But her car had broken down on the side of the highway, and I just couldn't leave her out there alone. In the depressing hours of that early morning, I wondered if I'd been a fool to stop and help her. If I'd been smart, I would have looked the other way and headed on down the highway. Instead, I stopped and got her car running using electrical tape and a wire coat hanger. Her car then limped into the next truck stop with my rig trailing behind like a mother hen keeping an eye on a baby chick. 20 feet into the parking lot, the old car coughed, gasped, and gave up. I parked my rig and walked over to her car. She was staring at the windshield, her shoulders slumped in defeat. I stood there with my hands on my hips, fatigued, exasperated, and staring grimly at her front tire. "It's as bald as a baby's behind," I thought irritably. "But, hell, there's bound to be a mechanic somewhere around here. I've done my part. I'll wish her well, grab a bite to eat, and then get a couple hours sleep." Instead, I asked, "Will you be all right?" She straightened. I'll be just fine, thanks." I turned away and actually took a couple of steps before turning back to say, "Look, this car's shot. Is there anyone you can call?" She tightened her lips, her face pale and taut with strain in the merciless lights of the parking lot. "No," I groaned inwardly. "If there's a lost lamb anywhere, why am I always the one to find it?" I wondered. "Do you have any money?" She blinked. Her eyes were large and light blue. They contrasted sharply with her dark, feathery eyelashes. "Some," she hedged. "Damn it," I yelled, my voice rising as I felt myself teetering on the edge of what my mother always called my Sir Galahad complex. "How much do you have?" She cleared her throat, and it was a rough, painful sound. $57.13, she admitted. $57? I ground out. "That's it? You've got a broken car. You're alone out here in the middle of nowhere, and you've got a grand total of $57.13? I thumped the roof of the car with the flat of my hand. "Are you nuts?" She shoved the car door open and climbed out. As she glared up at me, I realized how small she was. She didn't even come up to my shoulder. She looked thin under her bulky denim jacket, and the hand she lifted to shove her hair away from her face was fragile looking. "She looks ready to collapse," I thought, as I slipped almost unnoticed into phase two of the Sir Galahad trap. I told you, I'm fine, she said, and then compressed her lips to still their trembling. Are you a runaway? I asked, bluntly. If so, she let out a laugh, startling me with its harshness. No, I'm not a runaway. I guess you could say I'm running to something and not away from it. I didn't try to figure that remark out. Look, I'll give you bus fare and you can head home. I'd never see the money again, but what the hell? She shook her head and her silky hair swirled around her face in the chilly, diesel-laden breeze. I don't have a home, she said flatly. Damn, I muttered. I knew how it felt to be alone ever since Jamie had decided 2 years before that she didn't want to be married to a trucker who was on the road all the time and saving his money to be a cattle rancher. But at least I had my mother and Uncle Joe and dog all waiting for me at the ranch, my ranch in Colorado. Granted, it wasn't much of a ranch at that point, but I had plans for it. I had a place, and this little slip of a girl apparently had nothing. I sighed. Where are you headed? Denver. What's in Denver? I asked. She stiffened and turned her back to me. The most important person in the world to me. I groaned. It's not some guy, is it? Honey, believe me. Look, it's really none of your business. She interrupted. Thanks for your help, but it's my problem. She waved at the long line of parked semis. I'll get a ride to Denver. You can't just walk up to some stranger and ask for a ride, I told her, raising my voice angrily over the revving of the diesel engines. God knows where you'll end up. I'll just have to take my chances. I was well into phase two by then, and hell-bent on getting to phase three. I knew all the signs. Phase one is just being helpful. Phase two is concern. That leads to genuine worry. Phase three is taking them under your wing because God knows what will happen to them if you don't. I'm going to Denver. I'm going to Denver, I heard myself say. I didn't plan to say it, but the words just appeared, hanging in the air between us. Phase three is like that every time. Julian's always taken care of strays, my mother tells people. It was dogs and cats when he was younger, and it's people now that he's grown up. Out on the road, picking up strays usually means trouble of one kind or another. When I saw the relieved expression on this kid's face, though, I knew I was committed. I could only hope that I hadn't stuck my neck out where somebody could chop it off. Oh, are you? She breathed. And those eyes got even bigger and bluer. That's wonderful. Yeah, I muttered and shifted from one foot to the other. Gratitude always makes me uncomfortable. Well, grab your stuff and I'll talk to the manager about your car. She hesitated at the door of my rig, and I knew that she was having second thoughts. Horatio, Julian Webster, I told her. You'll be safe with me, okay? Okay, she said huskily as she climbed inside. I'm Rachel. When I came back from the truck stop with burgers and fries, she was asleep, curled into a tight little ball. I shrugged, bit into a burger, and decided to let her sleep. Trusting little fool, I thought. She's sleeping like a baby when she could be stretched out beside Jack the Ripper. When the welcome sight of a rest area loomed ahead, I stopped. I covered the girl with a blanket and crawled warily into my sleeper behind the seat. I set my alarm and closed my eyes, knowing I'd have to burn up the highway the next day to make up for the lost time. When I woke up, I found her outside sitting at a picnic table. She was watching the sunrise. I stifled a groan, and stretched the kinks out. Just a few more hauls and I'd be in a position to hang up this job and settle down raising cattle. She turned to face me and I was startled anew at the clarity of her eyes. I think I owe you an apology. Her throat was slender, pale, and fragile looking, and I looked away as it worked with emotion. I look like a kid, but I'm actually 25. I blinked in surprise. I'm not going to Denver to meet some guy. I'm pretty sure my son is there. My ex-husband stole him from my babysitter while I was at work. Her soft mouth thinned, and she looked older and more disillusioned in the revealing morning light. He's only 5 years old, and he needs his mother. She cleared her throat, and I need him. I don't care what it takes. I'm going to get my son back. My breath left me in a soundless gush. Boy, Julian, I thought when you save a maiden in distress, you don't mess around, do you? Why don't you just go to the authorities? I asked carefully. She got up and paced around the table. I've done everything by the book and gotten no results. There have been warrants, injunctions, hearings, and lawyers' bills. Lots of lawyers' bills, actually. I'm tired of waiting. She ran a hand through her hair and peeled it off that frail neck. It might be different if Earl really wanted Tim, but he doesn't. Or if he were a decent, hardworking man, but he isn't. He took Tim just to get even with me. She stopped pacing, put her palms on the table, and leaned toward me. Still want to take me to Denver? I hesitated, but it was just a formality. I was so deep into phase three that I couldn't have gotten out even if I'd wanted to. Yeah, I said, I still want to take you to Denver. Those blue eyes were awash with tears, and I looked away. Thanks, she whispered. You're welcome, I said glumly. Now what? I wondered. Well, I'll get her to Denver and the rest is up to her. After a long moment, I asked, just for the heck of it, who has custody of your son? I do. I believed her, but then again, believe everything I'm told is a part of believing that is a part of phase three. Good, I murmured and stood up. Do you like cold hamburgers? She laughed, and the young, carefree sound rang out over the chilly morning. I love cold hamburgers. After making my delivery in Denver the next afternoon, I turned to her. Where can I drop you? She turned startled eyes on me, and I looked away as she nodded on her lower lip. Does she think I can just charge into a man's house while she demands her kid back? But how am I going to abandon her when she only has $57.13, I wondered. She seemed like a nice girl, attractive in an understated way, and she brought out my protective instincts. She was upbeat, not brooding or complaining, despite the problems she was up against. She was the exact opposite of Jamie. As always, I flinched at the thought of Jamie. I'd met her 3 summers before in Cheyenne. She was gorgeous, but also cold and calculating. I didn't learn about that until we'd been married for a few months. She stuck around for a year, hating the ranch and my long hauls away from home. I wasn't too surprised to come home from a haul and find her gone. I gave her all the love and dreams and hopes a man can have, and she walked out on me anyway. this hurt, or the hurt was gone, but the bitterness left a bad taste in my mouth when it came to women. This girl seemed different, though. I met those eyes head on and felt a faint stirring of emotion that I'd thought was long dead. The house that Rachel directed me to was located on a street full of dilapidated old houses with graffiti on the walls and trash spilling into the gutters. I took a deep breath, comparing it to the clean open spaces of my ranch. What a place to raise a kid. She gasped when she spotted a battered red two-wheeler bicycle leaning against the tilting porch. Thanks, Julian. She reached for the door handle. I put my hand over hers, stopping her. Look, how are you going to handle this? I don't know, she whispered, but I have to see if Tim's here. She turned those eyes on me, and they were filled with anxiety. I groaned and released her hand, knowing that I couldn't let her go in there alone. The woman who came to the door was middle-aged and haggard-looking. She was wearing a faded blue robe with a soiled front. She squinted through the smoke of the joint dangling from the corner of her mouth and clutched a can of beer. Yeah? Is Earl here? I asked. Who wants to know? I put my foot against the door. An old buddy from Ohio. Earl ain't here. He took off for Texas. Rachel gasped. Did he take his son with him? The woman snorted and ran a hand through her matted hair. What does he need with a kid when he's working in them oil fields? He left him here with me. God knows I don't need a kid, either at my age, even if he's my grandkid. I'm his mother, Rachel whispered. If you can't care for him, please let me take him home with me. She eyed Rachel with shrewd eyes. His mother, huh? You got proof? Rachel took her driver's license out of her wallet and handed it to her with a shaky hand. The woman studied the picture for a long time. Well, I don't know. Earl would have a fit if I were to let him go with you. He told me not to let Tim out of my sight until he got back. Kids can be such a handful, Earl. Earl should have been more considerate of you, Rachel said gently. Yeah, the woman said. He's always had to have things his way. I'm young. I can keep up with Tim and give him a good home. Well, I don't know. I fished my wallet out of my back pocket, opened it, and took out 450s. Money might work with this woman, I thought. Here, this will help with what you paid out for the kid. I don't imagine Earl left you with much before he left for Texas. The woman snatched the money out of my hand and put it in her pocket. She pinched her mouth into a thin line and squinted at Rachel. If I were to let you have him, where would you be taking him? When Rachel hesitated, I said, to a ranch up near the Wyoming border. There I was again, letting Sir Galahad do all the talking. Rachel whispered as her hand found mine and gripped it tightly. I could practically feel the tremors of fear and excitement washing over her slight body. Inside the home, I saw that a small boy was playing on the living room floor. He looked clean and well-fed, but his mouth drooped unhappily. He lifted his blue eyes. They were identical to Rachel's, and jumped to his feet. Mommy! He squealed and launched himself at her. Rachel dropped to her knees and wrapped her arms around him. After a long, tearful moment, she dried her eyes and stood up. The child still clung to her, his eyes darting between the grandmother and me and then back to Rachel. He isn't a bad kid, the woman said. He watches TV real quiet, like, and never causes me any trouble. She put out a hand as if to smooth the boy's hair, but then withdrew it when he moved even closer to Rachel. It's just that I don't need a kid, do you understand? Yes, Rachel whispered. I understand. Outside in the truck, Tim asked, Where are we going, Mommy? We're going home, I said, wondering just when I decided that these two were important to me. Two pairs of blue eyes turned on me. Rachel smiled at me, and I blinked. Look, what a smile. Oh, Lord, what a smile, I thought, feeling strangely lightheaded. Saving maidens in distress is intoxicating business. This ranch of mine, it's nothing great right now, but I have plans for it, I told her. Tim allowed one blue eye to surface again, long enough to whisper, Does it have cows? Sure, it has lots of cows and a big ugly dog with lots of hair. What's his name? Dog, I said absently, my thinking processes out of whack because of the warm glow in Rachel's eyes. You're a nice man, Julian Webster, she said, stumbling a little over the words. Yeah, I said, striving for lightness. It's a cross I bear. Tim gasped, You have a cross-eyed bear? Rachel and I started laughing and couldn't seem to stop. I was forced to pull over to the curb until we recovered. The next morning when I pulled off the highway onto the dusty road leading to my ranch house, I tried to see if it through their eyes. The house sat solid and squat just as it had for 70 years. It's surrounded by good grassland, and my 200 cows grazed constantly in the September sunshine. I felt peace settle over me. I loved this place, loved its solitude, its stillness, and its purity. I turned uncertainly toward Rachel and found her looking at me with that old familiar expression filled with fear and anxiety. Now, what are you looking so worried about? I asked softly. Are you sure about this? I'm positive, I told her. She looked toward my mother and Uncle Joe, who were sitting on the porch. Will your mother mind? She'll take one look at you and decide to put some meat on those bones of yours. And as for Tim, she'll love him to death. Julian, you're a regular, I laughed. Sir Galahad? Exactly, she said, her eyes shining. We climbed out of the truck, and Tim ran to meet Dog, who was loping toward us. Julian, thanks for everything. I don't know what I would have done without you, she added. No gratitude, I interrupted brusquely. I don't want gratitude from you. I stopped, finding myself shy upon meeting her beautiful eyes. Want what? It can wait, I told her, and it really could because they were there with me. Maybe they'd decide they like the place and like me well enough to stay. I have to leave again tomorrow, Rachel. I'll be gone for 2 weeks. I didn't want to go. I never wanted to go. But this time was different. There were so many things I wanted to show her and explain to her. It was early yet, and I knew I should bide my time, but I had to ask. You'll still be here when I get back, won't you? Yes, she said softly. I'll still be here when you get back. Good, I said. Good. We walked up the steps and met my mother's knowing eyes. Okay, that's the end of my first story for this hour. If you tuned in late, this is the Romance Program with volunteer Jeannie Yost for Sun Sounds. I have another story from True Love Magazine. It's called Not Fit to Be a Mother. Here's the story. The pain wasn't as bad if I lay on my side, but when I did that, I was facing the crib and the baby. My daughter was 6 hours and 14 minutes old, and I didn't want to even look at her. So I lay on my back on the hospital bed, ignoring the ache in my body and ignoring the baby. I lay there trying to gain strength in an hour or two, maybe sooner. I was going to get dressed, sneak out of the hospital, and get a cab to the bus station. I'd abandon the baby, leave it here, leave my life here. I shifted in bed and tugged at my hospital gown. It was bunched up and pulling on my sore breasts. As I loosened the fabric, my fingers brushed against me and I choked back a bitter laugh. My empty breast. Even that was another sign of how unfit I was to be a mother. Oh, the nurse had calmly explained away my problem, making milk for the baby, and talked about options, but I stopped listening. From the beginning of time, mothers have been designed to create the nourishment their babies need, but not me. It was a sign. Even my own mother had fed me that way, although I'd heard dozens of times how nursing me had ruined her figure. Just having me had ruined her life. In fact, how many times had one of her rants started with, "If I didn't have you." My father abandoned her when he found out that she was pregnant. I shifted my glance over toward the baby and spoke softly in that direction. Usually, I got a slap if I asked about my father, but one time, when she was really drunk, she told me about him. He was married and had, I don't know, 3 or 4 daughters. My mother thought that if she kept the baby, me, and had a son, he'd finally leave his wife for her. Somehow she even managed to stay off the booze while she was pregnant to give him the perfect, healthy son. I swallowed, then raised up and twisted around so I could sit with my legs hanging over the side of the bed. I hurt, but I knew I needed to get used to moving and get some strength back. I needed to leave soon. I looked over. The baby was awake and moving a little. It was making soft sounds, but not crying. I don't know why I'm talking out loud like this. You can't understand, I said, but it didn't stop me from continuing. So then I was born a girl. All of her hopes of getting him back were crushed, and she was left alone with a kid to raise. I added, not that she was alone much. The succession of men who came after my father had very little impact on my life. I remember 1 or 2 who were nice, who paid attention to me, and who bought me toys. The nice ones didn't seem to last long. In my teens, things changed. The sort of man who lived with my mother began to notice me in a way that made me feel really uncomfortable. My mother, in the grip of her lifelong affair with booze and drugs, couldn't or wouldn't notice. I soon realized that it was up to me to keep out of their way, and I got to be very good at it. I was just as good as at keeping the apartment clean, the laundry done, and the meals made. All those tasks I'd been responsible for from about the age of 7 or 8. Still sitting on the edge of the bed, I left my legs swing back and forth. It made me feel kind of dizzy at first, but the sensation soon passed. I sat there thinking and remembering. I ran away once, I murmured. I must have been, 10. I was so mad at her over something, and I thought, I thought if I were missing, it would worry her and scare her. I moved to a more comfortable position on the edge of the bed. So I took off. It sure scared me. I spent the whole night in the park, and I didn't go home until the next afternoon. I walked in expecting tears and hugs. I paused as the memory brought an ache to my chest. Mom was drunk. When I walked in, she yelled for me to go get her a beer and to clean up the kitchen. I swiped at my face. She didn't even know I'd been gone. With a bitter laugh, I added, "So you see, baby, I don't have a real good mothering example to go by, and she was all there was. That's why. It's best if I leave you here to be adopted. It's a good thing to do because I don't have anybody else. If there were any relatives, I didn't know about them. I had a feeling that my mother was estranged from her family because of her lifestyle, but I never knew for sure. Moving as often as we did only made me feel more alone. Making friends wasn't easy for me. I didn't dare bring a friend home, not knowing what kind of scene we might walk into. So I retreated into books. They became my friends. A soft sound from the crib drew my attention. I slipped down until my feet touched the floor and stood there for a moment. Slowly, I walked across the room and stared down at the baby. We were supposed to be bonding or something. The nurse had brought the crib in a couple hours earlier, smiling a smile that didn't reach her eyes as she said, "There, this will give you a chance to get better acquainted with your adorable little girl." I only shook my head when she asked if I wanted to hold the baby. That worried the nurse, I knew. They'd shoved the baby at me right after birth, but I flinched at the idea of touching her. They didn't press, just went ahead with doing whatever they do to newborns. I thought I heard one of the delivery room nurses murmur something about unresponsive and lack of bonding, but I couldn't be sure. I guess I knew even then that it wasn't going to work. "Maybe you can decide on a name," the nurse had chirped with another fake smile before leaving the room and leaving me with the baby. There was no point in deciding on a name. Whoever adopted it could do that. Still, I snuck another glance down at the baby and then quickly looked away. "It would have been Mary," I whispered. "My name's Margaret, and that way you could have a part of my name because you're part of me." I straightened and turned away. "No, no naming, no holding. There's no point." Because even the staff must have been beginning to realize what I'd already come to understand. I'm just not fit to be a mother. Slowly, I moved around the room, feeling less wobbly and a little stronger with each step. My mother threw me out of the house when she found out that I was pregnant, I said quietly. I had some money saved from my after-school jobs. I learned to keep it in my school locker. She always found my hiding places at home and took the money for dope or booze. I walked from one side of the room to the other. When I got to be a teenager, I knew what the boys at school wanted, of course, but I wasn't going to be like my mom. Then Justin, that's your dad's name, started just talking to me, looking for me after class and studying with me at the library. For some reason, I kept feeling like I had to explain things to the baby. So it wasn't like her situation, screwing around and him being married and all, Well, in one way, I guess it is. Justin freaked and totally dumped me when I told him, and he'd been so loving and sweet to me before. I thought he, well, that doesn't matter, but I want you to know that I didn't want to, you know, get rid of you or anything. I really thought I could. Well, anyway, it just never happened for me. The mother thing, I mean. I'm so busy. I know that doesn't make it right, but, you know, I'm just trying real hard to survive and all. Working and going to school at night for my GED. Anyway, I know this is the best way. I don't have a place to live anymore or anything, and I don't have my high school diploma yet or much money left. The people who adopt you can give you all kinds of things. I sighed. It would mean another flight, just like the day my mother kicked me out, another bus trip to a different city, and another scramble to find some kind of job. I stepped over to the cupboard and started pulling out the backpack I'd brought to the hospital and the clothes I'd worn. I did luck out when I met the melons, I told the baby. It lay quietly there with its head turned toward the sound of my voice, like it was watching me. I took the bus to Morristown, got a cheap room for a couple of nights, and just walked around looking for work. The melons had this nice little family restaurant, and there was a help wanted sign in the window. Mrs. M, she likes me to call her that, knew right away how desperate I was. She gave me the job and told Mr. Mellon to clear out a small storeroom. They put an old bunk bed from when their sons were small, a chest of drawers, and a TV in there and let me stay. I had to pay a little rent, but it was practically nothing. They just did it to be nice. Isn't that something? The baby made a soft gurgling sound. I took my backpack and close to the bed and started to take off the hospital gown. The pain was worse after being up and around, but I just gritted my teeth. Yeah, and they never asked about my family or my past or anything. And even after I started to show and had to admit that I was pregnant, I got to stay. In fact, Mrs. M even took me to the clinic for checkups. I really got along well with Mrs. M. Mr. Mellon is kind of grouchy, but I'm a hard worker. And that seemed to win him over a little. After a couple of months, he even gave me a compliment now and then on the work I did. I graduated from dishwasher to helping with the cooking. Then Mrs. M had me wait tables on the weekends. I was really showing by then, but Mrs. M said that the customers might feel sorry for me because I was pregnant and had to be on my feet. She said they might leave good tips, but she would only let me do it for a couple of hours, not a full shift, and it worked just like she said it would. After I finished getting dressed, I sat back down on the bed to rest, catch my breath, and let the pain ease up a little. I pulled a small plastic sack out of my backpack and took out the three items it contained. Once, just once, Mrs. M said something about after the baby comes and tried to get me to go with her to the rummage sale at St. Teresa's to buy baby clothes. I flat out told her no, and she never brought up you or the future again. It's like she knew what I was going to do. I picked up one of the items. I got to thinking that both of them must be worrying about being stuck with me and a baby, and I couldn't do that to them. They were good to take me in and hire me, So about a week ago, I left a note to say thanks and left. I was staying in this flea bag motel, and then my water broke, and, well, here we are. I started walking around the room again. I was feeling stronger. I went over and looked at the baby again. I looked but felt nothing. It was that lack of feeling that convinced me most of all that I was unfit to be a mother. I said quietly, I remember once I was waiting at the free clinic for one of my prenatal visits, and I overheard a young woman with a baby talking to her friend. I had no idea I could love so much, she said. I swear, if anything happened to my baby, they might as well dig two holes. I didn't understand why I didn't feel that way. I watched the baby. I guess I expected maybe something would happen at the last minute after the birth, I whispered. You know, some kind of kaboom, magic pixie dust or something, and then I'd know what it feels like, a mother's love and being a loving mother. But it didn't happen. Even then, I felt nothing, nada, zip, zilch. I looked down at what I held, a copy of the book, Goodnight Moon. I placed it in the baby's crib. This is something I bought once when I still, well, anyway, to the clinic. At the clinic, I heard one of the mothers say how good it was. Looking at the book brought back another memory. One night, a week or so after I bought this, you were really being busy in there and moving and kicking like crazy. I found myself smiling at the memory. So I got out this book, put my hand on my belly, and read it to you. Do you believe it? You quieted down. My smile faded. I must have just hit right when you were going to sleep. Anyway, I guess. I turned away and went over to the bed to get the other two items. I put them in the crib as well. Since I didn't know if you'd be a girl or a boy, I got this outfit in mint green and the teddy bear. Well, I saw it and I stopped and swallowed. I didn't want to just throw this stuff away since I'm not keeping you. The people who adopt you can give them to you. Oh, wait, there's something else. I went back to my backpack and pulled out a sealed envelope. Returning to the crib, I placed it with the book, stuffed animal, and outfit. I don't want you thinking I'm a bad person for doing this, I said softly, or that it's something you did. It's not your fault that I'm not fit to be a mom. The baby stared up at me, quiet, not crying. You know, it feels like you're watching me, and I know that's crazy. I know babies don't really see at first. Yeah, you're just a good baby, I guess. The people who raise you, they're gonna like that. I thought for a moment I wanted to make sure the baby would get a better deal than I'd gotten. I decided I'd better really spell it out for the people who'd raise the baby. I got a pen and notepad with the hospital logo on it from the table over the bed. I walked back to the crib. As I wrote, reading it to the baby as I went along. Dear people who adopt the baby, this is my official okay for adoption, and my signature will be at the bottom of this note. I want to be sure you do the right thing. I cleared my throat, looked down at the baby, and then looked away. One, I began, writing quickly. Be sure you give her lots and lots of attention. You should play games with her and take her to the park so she gets to be outside and see the squirrels and stuff. Two, you should tell her a story every night, a story you make up with her as the heroine so she knows that she can save the day just like boys can. Three, you should read to her and help her with her homework. It's really important for her to get a good education so that she has choices. 4, you've got to go to all the school stuff, you know, parent-teacher conferences and recitals and games and everything. Oh, yeah, and you should always put her drawings on the refrigerator and not make fun of them and throw them away like my mom did. My voice cracked, and I had to stop and take a deep breath before I could go on. 5, please listen to her and hug her and give her kisses and make sure she knows she's loved. I blinked several times, and then, with a faint smile, added, and for the record, 6, I guess, is to make sure that she knows that guys will say and do about anything to get laid and not to fall for it. Tell her she should wait for love. And 7, I looked down at the baby. She was lying there quietly watching me. I frowned. She'd been awake now for quite a while without crying. Aren't babies supposed to cry a lot? I wondered, why wasn't she crying or moving much more than just waving her arms a little? My breath caught. Suppose something was wrong. I dropped the pad and pen and reached into the crib. The baby made a soft noise as I picked her up. Holding the baby in the curve of my arm, I touched her cheeks and forehead. Her skin didn't feel hot, but why would I even know if the way she felt were right? I wondered if I should call for the nurse. The baby gurgled, and a flailing arm brushed against my hand as it rested by her cheek. Her little hand closed around one of my fingers and gripped it tight. I stared down at the 5 tiny fingers clasped around my finger. Each tiny fingernail was perfect. My eyes burned and my chest felt like I couldn't get enough air. This isn't fair, I whispered, looking down at her. If I'm not good mother material, it shouldn't have to hurt like this. I shouldn't be crying, should I? It shouldn't feel like my heart is breaking, like the world is ending. Her fingers tightened around my finger. She pursed her tiny, perfect little mouth, looked up at me, and made a soft sound. And then I knew. Oh, this is it, isn't it? I said quietly as a tear dropped from my cheek to hers. Dig 2 holes. I understand now. On weak legs, I walked over to the bed and sat drawing the baby. My baby, closer to me. My baby, mine. My baby, my beautiful baby, I crooned as I rocked with her back and forth on the bed, crying and smiling. My very own Mary. I breathed in the fragrance of her and kissed the perfect curve of her cheek. Oh, Mary, it won't be easy for us, but it'll work. I don't know now, but I don't know how, but I swear to you it will work. Somehow I will make it work. The door swung open and a whirlwind entered, in the form of a flustered, upset, excited, and determined Mrs. M. She was followed by a nurse who was trying to keep up with her and the armload of shopping bags she was flailing around. Mrs. M. stomped into the room and up where I sat on the bed with my baby. Each day I called all the hospitals to see if you had the baby yet. Finally, I found you. She huffed, then drew herself up. You and the baby are going to live with us upstairs in the boys' old room. You'll work in the restaurant a little. You'll finish school, and I'll watch the baby. Then you'll go to college, and I'll watch the baby. No arguments. She stopped, looked at me, and I saw something in her eyes that I recognized. It was something I'd never seen before that day, and it made me understand that what makes a family has nothing to do with biology. What I saw was a mother's love. And it was a look that I knew must have been shining in my own eyes. I reached out a hand to her, the only real mother I'd ever have, the woman I'd teach my daughter to call Grandma. Come, meet my daughter. This is my Mary. Okay, that's the end of that story. I thought that was a really good story, and I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you enjoyed this romance show. Thank you so much for listening. This has been Volunteer Jeannie Yost for Our Sun Sounds. Have a great week and take care of yourselves, and I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.